Welcome to another episode of the podcast. You know, there is no hard and fast rule for when I interview someone and when I eventually produce their episode. And so it was with a lot of shock that I kind of understood it had been 6 months since I'd interviewed Natalie Bedard. And going through producing the podcast, I thought to myself, why did I wait so long? But I do think that all events are divinely timed. And considering that Natalie talks about self-care, self-healing, being good to ourselves, how to regulate our nervous systems, I mean, that's all stuff I've recently been diving into in the last couple months. And so for me, it makes perfect sense that it's been 6 months because I needed to kind of enter the arena of self-care and self-healing and nervous system adjustment. And then hearing this podcast, well, everything became clear. And let me let you know that Natalie is very plain spoken. And her miracle this episode, one which she can talk about seemingly cavalierly, but I know that it is not cavalier, that she doesn't take it lightly, is that one day she went into the hospital and they discovered lesions on her brain. And her story of how she overcame that and found a way to wholeness, found a way to wellness, it's absolutely shocking. Shocking and surprising, because I think many of us would get a diagnosis like that and think, okay, it's over, game over, my life is over. But Natalie, she did exactly the opposite. And that's what makes this interview so captivating. So now, my interview with Natalie Bedard.
So anybody knows that if you don't have a diagnosis, you don't have a plan. So I was in the wilderness and I really, you know, went through a different relationship with death. I went through a different relationship with God. And there was a surrendering of finally coming into trusting myself, trusting into the voice and the guidance that was in me that seemed crazy to other people and just didn't make sense. Yet every time I listened to it, it was very profound.
As a human being, if you had to go to a party or a conference and you had to introduce yourself to a group of people, how would you do that?
Who is Natalie? Natalie is curious. She's playful because her nickname is Nat Nat, and most people address me as Nat Nat. She's kind. She's nurturing. She does a lot of deep listening. She understands herself and continuously wants to learn more about herself so that she can be open with others. Very empathetic. Can be a little bit of a badass, though, sometimes if I'm triggered or my boundaries have been harmed. And she is a parent to three boys that have brought her into her spiritual practice of learning more about herself and has allowed me to return into a love of really loving myself deeply and connecting back into self and into my worth.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in the North Ontario. So I live in Canada. So I grew up in Sudbury. So north of, most people know Toronto in Canada. So about 4 hours north from there. Very, very chilly winters.
I was going to say, you know, how long of a summer do you have all that far north?
Probably from April till like September, October, depending on, they call an Indian summer, September, October, we still get nice weather. And then probably about end of October, most times Halloween, there's snow for us. So, yeah. So about like, you know, four or five months maybe.
And is it gloriously beautiful where you are?
I actually live now in Ottawa, which is 5 hours east and going south from Sudbury. And where I am, Ottawa is a beautiful town. It's a very political town because this is where our parliament is and where our prime minister lives. So there's a lot of diplomats and consulate homes. And so it's very built in a lot of nature because we have a canal that runs through the whole city and people around the world come here in the winter time. It's called Winterlude. And therefore we are very dedicated to keeping the forest and a lot of nature. So it's in, built into the city dynamics. So we get to enjoy all the seasons, the fall, the winter, the spring, the summer, you see the vibrance. And it really, you know, the other day I told somebody fall reminds us how beautiful death can be. And they were like, I never even realized that. I'm like, you know, a tree doesn't technically die when it loses its leaves. We think it does, yet it's just gone dormant and re-energizing itself. Yet those leaves do. And the vibrancy of how colorful they can become and that they drop and understand that those leaves are the cycle of life to do compost and to help other things that sustain the whole earth and the whole dynamic of where we live. So it helps to, you know, do that spiritual practice of letting go of the control of the narration of how life ought to be. And really nature teaches us how to surrender and have acceptance.
And I'm curious, do you still have relatives or family back in Sudbury in that area?
I do, yet we're not in communication. I went up to Sudbury in 2021 for my mother's 70th birthday. I brought her up there during COVID and she got to connect with some of her friends and I have twin boys and they got to see Sudbury and where I grew up. And there's a beautiful museum. So if anybody ever goes to Sudbury that's listening, please go see Science North. It is the most interactive, tactical museum that children can understand science and energy and touch things. Because a lot of museums you go into and they're like, you can't touch, can't stand on this, you can't do this. There it's an octagon made in glass and it's a spiral of going up the levels so that you can see. And they have porcupines there. They have electric chairs. They have a nail bed. They have a Lego station. They just incorporated everything that would be science and energy. So to really fuel that curiosity in children. And it's a really beautiful thing because also it's in the rocks because Sudbury is a mining town. That's where our copper comes from in the world. So the geology and the way that they've infused and built it around, it just, I love, that's one of my top museums that I've ever visited. So I'm always advocating and cheering on. If you go to Sudbury, it's a must. Just go to Science North because it's a beautiful display that they created there.
I love that you had me at museum because I love museums. So thank you. I'm like, what? Another museum to add to my list. I really, you know, I have fantasies of someday. Well, I did look into getting a master's of folktale up in, Nova Scotia. There's a college up there. And I've always wanted to spend an extended period of time in Prince Edward Island because of Anne of Green Gables and just how beautiful it looks. So it was kind of my very expensive way of being closer to Prince Edward Island, getting this thing off my bucket list, but also getting a master's of folktale, which has always been something I've wanted to do. But I love, you know, you and I were talking before the interview started. I am like a nomad. And so, you know, I'm like, oh, I could totally see going up into Canada to get a master's of folktale to go then spend time where Lucy Maud Montgomery wrote Anne of Green Gables. I mean, that's just, I'm like, why not? Why wouldn't anybody do this? I think I actually
have been to PEI. I brought the twins there. We drove over there and I stayed in a motel that was across from her graveyard. So where she was laid to rest. And PEI is magical. It's a beautiful, the people are slow paced. It is very high tax. I don't know, like, you understand that people do trades. So they, you know, there's a lot of farming and stuff because groceries and stuff are ridiculous in price. And in that island, it's so diverse. So each little corner, you feel like you're in a different part of a place. And it's all very close knitted. Warning though, their winters are very brutal. Like, they get a lot of snow there. So they had, when I went in the summertime, and they had said, yeah, our winters, we can get snowed in and everything else. Like, it's high, high mountains of snow that we get there. So, you know, everything has its bittersweet of, and the people, you know, make it work. There's people that have retired from here and gone over to PEI, and they're like, there's no other place I want to be. And I totally understand, because it's a really magical place. And it's something that I think if people want to put it on their bucket list, they won't be disappointed. It's really beautiful.
Okay. You have done nothing to dissuade me from wanting to go visit now. Oh my gosh. Thank you. Thank you for actually letting me know that, and that it lives up to the hype. And now, yes, it's moved higher up the bucket list. So I'm curious, when you were a kid, did you kind of even imagine that you'd be doing the work that you're doing now?
You know, it's funny. When I was like a teen, I did a co-op with a daycare, and I helped out with the children. And I had said to myself that I was not going to ever be a parent, because I didn't want to bring a child into a world that was so cruel and people didn't listen to children. And I wanted to be a child psychologist. Yet I didn't follow through with that, because people dissuaded me, saying that to be a psychologist, so many years of training, then you have to be an entrepreneur and create your own practice and yada, yada, yada. So I then went into security with the government, which I interviewed and learned about human behavior. So again, still in that realm, as the universe would have it. And then I became a parent. So then you really understand child psychology if you're willing to open up to understand the dynamics. And then, you know, the lesions in my brain that I had almost like over 10 years ago, where I almost died, brought me back into that part of holding space for people. Did I ever think it would be as profound as it is right now? I think I had some glimmers of it. I just didn't know how to accept the gift that I had and the way that I hold space for people to go within themselves. And this year has been a year of me being comfortable in my skin, comfortable in what I have to offer, and no longer looking outwardly for that validation, recognizing that that validation is within myself. So that little girl is finally like really excited, like finally you see and you're connected and you're accepting what's been inside you all along.
Thank you for that. That's actually really beautiful, because you brought it into kind of where we are now in time, and just the evolution of yourself, how it's evolved over time. So thank you for that. That was really, really thoughtful. When you were growing up, was, you know, the second question is, did you grow up in a religious household? And what did that look like as a kid? How did it evolve over time to your understanding of kind of like the universe and reality now?
It's evolved big time. I grew up in a Catholic household. It didn't make sense to me though, because we'd go to church and do all the things on Sunday, yet the behavior of the adults didn't blend with what was being said in the church. And for me, I was considered a little bit of a, you know, a disruptor because I did critical thinking from a young child. So I would ask, like, why is it only the priest can hold the Bible and he's the only one that can communicate to God? Why do we have to go through the priest to be able to talk to God? Like, why don't we have this direct connection? And why can we not touch the Bible? And then even the question of an ever-loving God that is ever-forgiving, yet if we don't follow these things, we're going to hell. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. And so, you know, I grappled with that. And then because of the trauma that I experienced, I othered myself. I put myself outside of belonging in humanity, because why would God allow this experience to happen to me that was so painful? And that just separated me from self, which when you understand your inner work, that self is connected to God. And so, you know, I went on with the Catholic religion. Of course, there was some indoctrination in there because they attack your sexuality. They attack the way that your behavior is supposed to be. They attack of, you know, curiosity. They're stunting it and all these kind of things. So there was some challenges with me because I wasn't letting go of my critical thinking, yet it dimmed my light in certain perspectives. And as I got in my 20s and my 30s, it became more in a Christian way of understanding God, yet I still spoke in a spiritual way and really blending that. Now, fast forward to now, I use the word God. I use the word universe. I use the word higher power and divinity. I understand the Catholic religion and I use it in a way that is opening, not constrictive and judgmental. And I think that's where a lot of religions where people can't relate with themselves is because the judgmental mind takes those texts and makes you feel like you're not good enough. You're not reaching the love that God has for you because your behavior hasn't been whatever it is. And really, you know, that forgiveness piece, people are always thinking it's outside of them, where it's like, no, the forgiveness is within yourself to open back up your heart, knowing that you're probably going to experience pain again. And most of us don't want to open up our heart again and to allow that flow of joy and that flow of vulnerability. To love means to be able to know that you're going to experience pain. So my evolution of that little Catholic, and I was an altar girl and all these things, yet I had questions and it was not met with, openness. Yeah, what I must say, though, I went to a Catholic school and I think we were in grade 5 or 6 and we were the first test of bringing sexuality. So they talked about sex, and that was a big thing for a Catholic school to talk about sexuality and sexual transmitted diseases to younger children. Yet I was thankful that I was a part of that, so could see that, you know, let's not scorn the humanness in us. Let's be better understand it so that we can create community and relatability.
I mean, I really, really appreciate that you brought in that strand of which breaks my heart, by the way, that it dimmed you a little bit. It dimmed your light. You know, here you are. I mean, most children are just excited to be in the world and excited to be here. And they just want to have fun and connect and play and have a good time, but are endlessly curious about the world. And I think sometimes those mainstream religions, they want conformity. They want people to toe the line. They want no questions. Absolutely no questions are allowed. And for a kid, that's hard because you're so curious about the world. So thank you for bringing that in. And I do think that when those religions squash those questions, and it does dim the light of children, it does dim, make them smaller, I guess. It makes them smaller and they learn that they can't be endlessly curious, because sometimes that's not comfortable for other people or institutions.
Exactly. And, you know, that's where you learn the journey within, You know, like Joseph Campbell, some people may know that narration of The Alchemist and really understand you go outside. And, you know, there's a part of having to go outside to better understand who you are, and then going within to really appreciate, you know, listening to that guidance that's within you that will guide you to what your life and how you want to create it, not taking the blueprint of somebody else that's telling you that will bring you safety. Because the reason why we get midlife crisis is because we've been listening to a narration of somebody else's story, that we haven't been the commandment of the pen writing our own story, because we didn't think we had permission, because we need to meet these dogmatic ritual parts of religion to feel a sense of belonging or acceptance. We don't even know how to just be and recognize that we're already in our worth, yet we're so bombarded with a message that you're not good enough and you have to work at getting that worth to be in that grace. And that can be very confusing for people, because it's almost like a visual of a donkey chasing a carrot, and they can never attain the carrot, but the carrot's there telling it like, come on, come on. And maybe they might snip a little piece and taste with the carrot, but they can never really enjoy that carrot. And so, you know, my journey in the past 10 years has been able to remove those defense mechanisms in the nervous system and be in my vulnerability and be in my worth and see some of the stuff that I interpreted and created an identity I could release now, and that I could create safety in my body, no longer grasping outside to look for that safety, that it's for me to create that safety within myself.
Since we were children, our nervous systems are just going every which way, and just we're trying to survive. You know, we're just trying to survive and get to the next thing. And I think, you know, it's just in the last year I've read more and more about nervous system regulation and trying to reclaim what the process is to reclaim kind of the nervous system that we had as children before the world kind of intruded and forced us to be all sorts of things, especially productive. And it's a process. You can't just do it overnight. It doesn't even happen in 2 weeks or even a month, but it is a process. And there are lots of different modalities you can use, by the way, to achieve nervous system regulation. So what are some of your favorites?
Meditation, like we just saw, grounding myself in my breath and allowing myself to feel. We're in a society that numbs our feelings, so we don't even know how to identify our emotions, and not just our secondary emotions, our authentic emotions. So when we were children, we had authentic emotions, yet a lot of times we were told we weren't allowed to express them. It could be anger, it could be sadness, it could be curiosity, it could be helplessness. We were told to be something other than what we were experiencing and what we were feeling. So we shut it down and created these secondary emotions. And in that, then you created a new identity. And when these emotions are trying to come up to give you information, because that's what they are, you push them down and you just listen to what the habits you've created. And so, as you said, it's now, okay, let me understand my biology and let me rewire it. Yet you have to understand your own biology. You cannot go through what we tend to do is go through other people to better understand ourselves. So I'm going to look at your life and I'm going to see all the things that you're doing. And, you know, that's part of our mirror neurons. I know I'm getting sciencey with people, yet it's educating yourself how your biology works, because we do need those mirror neurons. That's why we need modeling and mentorship, so people can show us and we can see it and we can adapt it. Yet what we do, though, is we don't allow ourselves to be curious about who we are internally. We go into the program that somebody else knows better than our own experiences. And we don't know how to foster a space of honesty. You know, throughout this podcast, I was very transparent about things. And that's taken me, you know, I've been one without a filter, yet to really stand in my story and not have the tear gates come out or the embarrassment be felt and really just accept my story where I am, it's because I've had to foster honesty. and recognize that honesty isn't about judgment. It's not about belittling yourself. It's about, okay, this is my story and what can I use from it? Because everything can be used. Another modality is journaling. I do a lot of nature walking. So anytime I can go anywhere in the world, I'm outside engaging with nature and seeing how it interacts and better understanding how life is impermanent and how the joys and the glimmers of, you know, life and also movement. So a lot of people, you know, they hear exercise and they're like, oh, I don't want to do anymore. And it's like, okay, put some music on and start dancing. Dancing is the best way to activate and actually do a somatic release of what your body needs to release and give it expression without it being filtered in your analytical and judgmental mind, that the body needs to release these energies and these suppressed emotions and experiences. And dancing is the quickest way to rise our mental state and allow that energy to flow through us. And you can get into high tempo, you can get into slow, yet it's movement. And some people forget to access dancing if they don't want to do the cardio of, you know, staircasing or running, that they can actually just start dancing at a high speed. And that's the same. And it's enjoyable. So there's different modalities and you have to be curious of what works for you and be your own mad scientist.
I love that. We need more mad scientists in this world. That's my mad scientist laugh to everyone. I've been practicing. I think it still needs a little work, but yes. And we should all have mad scientist laughs as well. I encourage that for everybody. Well, thank you for that. I think, you know, as I think all of us wish to be more calm, more centered, more grounded. There are lots of different ways to do it. You know, it's not one size fits all. And I encourage everyone who's listening, go out. And if you want to maybe become a little more of a chill person, a little more centered and grounded, find something that helps you to regulate and be present in your body. So, well, we're coming to the delicious part. Not that this all hasn't been delicious, but this part of the podcast is my favorite, where I ask you, I say, I would love to hear or would love for you to share a story or stories, it can be more than one, of something magical, mysterious, miraculous that's happened in your life, something that changed your life forever or allowed you to understand that there's more to this reality than we just, you know, kind of see with our eyes. I'd love to hear anything you'd like to share.
Well, like I said previously, I almost died over 10 years ago. I had lesions in my brainstem and my cerebellum, and my body completely shut down. So I was hospitalized for almost 40 days. And when the medical system doesn't understand what is causing, you go through a battery of very painful tests. I had lumbar punctures, some might know as a spinal tap. I had biopsies done. I even had radiation put into me in the amount that they said if I went to any border, I would be detained wondering if I was a terrorist, which I was like, I thought we're supposed to stay away from radiation. And they chuckled and they said, well, science is funny like that. So we have to do certain discoveries to find things. In that, as I said, they told me because of where the lesions were and how big they were, that they were only giving me 6 months and that if I did survive, I wouldn't be walking, I wouldn't be talking, I'd need assisted devices and just practically a crippled. And so I was actually transferred from one hospital to another because they were going to do a brain biopsy, yet one person, the head of the doctor said, you know what, we've been doing all these biopsies and these spinal taps and everything's coming back atypical, that there's something there, yet not giving us information of what is the root cause or what's the diagnosis that we can give. So they're like, you know what, we're going to release you because there's not much more we can do, yet we don't want to do a brain biopsy because we could do more damage than good. So anybody knows that if you don't have a diagnosis, you don't have a plan. So I was in the wilderness and I really, you know, went through a different relationship with death. I went through a different relationship with God. And there was a surrendering of finally coming into trusting myself, trusting into the voice and the guidance that was in me that seemed crazy to other people and just didn't make sense. Yet every time I listened to it, it was very profound. And there was a lot of times where I got guidances and I was, you know, fighting back and being like, I'm not doing that. Like, are you insane? Like, I am not. And it's just a gentle, like, this is what's presented. Follow through or try to do it on your own. And sometimes I try to do it on my own and I'd fumble and get some results. Yet the guidance within me, when I listened to it, it blew my mind of how simple of a process there could be, yet how much conflict was in me to really follow that guidance. And so there was a lot of warrior work of really understanding my biology, understanding the spiritual aspect, understanding the human side. And like I said, I learned that meditation a year after. And that's where it brought more profound of connecting into my nervous system, into the which, you know, holds your vulnerability, which holds that self and that, you know, higher power, that life force that is connecting all of us. There were so many miracles in this past 10 years that when I explain the things, people's mouths are dropping. Like, I was in the hospital and one of the twins got kicked out of daycare because they were having behavior. They were only 4 at the time. And of course, you're going to have behavior when your mother's in the hospital and being told that you're going to die. And I was a solo parent at the time. So I'm the only one to regulate, yet I'm not capable of doing it. Then, you know, I had bills that were unbelievable. They were all paid off. I had to retire from my work. Thankfully, I worked in the government, so I was able to get a medical disability. So yeah, there was an adjustment before I could get that. I had to go on to unemployment and insurance, which is called EI, and had to change my whole lifestyle and budgeting and all these different things. Yet that allowed me to learn about how I was using spending to soothe myself. And then that gave me a different relationship with money and currency. And then, you know, as I said, the spiritual practice of my parenting and going even more profound of not running away from myself and better understanding myself and empowering the twins with their critical thinking. So there's like so many miracles, and I'm a living testament right now of, you know, I'm able to walk, I'm able to dance. I still have significant pain in my brain at times because of the scarring where my brain lesions were in my brainstem and in my cerebellum. Yet it's nothing to what they had given me as a prognosis. And even, you know, the neurosurgeon, and my neurologist and even my general practitioner, they're like, we have no idea how it got there and we have no idea how it rectified itself. And when I would explain the mindfulness and what was going on internally, they would say, yeah, it sounds like some mindfulness, yet they weren't even open to be curious to want to find out more to be able to, you know, possibly impart this to other patients. Yet that was my own, you know, battle within. And that's why I decided to create Lift Oneself. And it took a lot of meditation because my doctor was like, you almost died. So you cannot go back into a workforce because stress will kill you this time. And so she's like, I'll allow you to do it a little by little. Yet once that stress gets activated, you're out. And I'm in a place where I'm being filled with the energy. And I can just be myself and not try to create these personas of validate me and look how great I am. It's like, I already know what I have to offer. So really understanding what the law of attraction is and being able to attract those things. And when I get dysregulated, because this nervous system has gone through a lot in these, you know, I'm 50 years old. So the past 5 decades, a lot of people think healing is everything's going to go away and everything's magical and you have arrived somewhere, and that's not what it is. It's really understanding when you're triggered to get yourself back centered and grounded and be able to have that honest communication with yourself. So that's what I help other people to go within, to be curious about their biology, find out what works for them, and create the tools that they will consistently remind themselves. And when life is impermanent, new experiences come up, that they can navigate those tsunami of waves internally and remember, oh yeah, I have to regulate this nervous system and come back into grounding within myself and creating that safety in the body.
For all that, I just want to clarify. So they never figured out exactly what the lesions were. Is that correct?
Yeah, they don't. I still don't have a diagnosis for that. The closest they came, because I had to take a medical disability, they had to give it a neurosarcoidosis just for paperwork. Yet to describe what is going on internally. Yet when we did the biopsies, and I went through many biopsies to try to determine that, which was, as you saw me just cringe with that, still was inconclusive for that.
So basically, because when I heard lesions, I thought, oh goodness, is that a kind of tumor or a kind of cancer? Or I also think of lesions as, you know, when you like say on your skin, it's not a cut, it's not a, you know, scab, it's sort of like in between sort of, but I think the lesions you're talking about are totally different because they're in your body and on your brain. And I think it's really interesting that all of your lab work was coming back, something is not right, but they could not figure out what it was. And I hate the fact that because they couldn't figure out what it was, they said, okay, I guess you go home now. You know, we don't really know how to deal with this because we have no idea what's going on. That must have been, I mean, I can't even imagine how frustrating and terrifying that must have been.
And that was the experience I needed to strengthen my faith and live in a sense of a miracle, to show people a living testament of what's possible, because I think my trajectory would have been totally different if I had a diagnosis. Because a lot of times when people get a diagnosis, it becomes an ownership of my thing, where I also was put in the wilderness, so I couldn't go back into previous habits. Because once you have a plan, we're very pattern driven. And when we get a little sense of comfort, we just go back to what we were habituated into. So because I didn't have a plan, didn't have kind of like a prescription of what to do, I had to be very mindful of removing things to open up the energy within my own life and really have that guidance from within and faith and, you know, walking in faith. Was there a lot of fear? Heck yeah. Was there a lot of frustration? Yeah. It also broke a lot of my belief system that the medical system really understands everything. And just like us, they're all, you know, trying to figure things out. And the testament that I would have would show that, yeah, I went through a lot of fear. So I'm not just talking something, I've walked the walk. Like, I understand, like, you may have a diagnosis that's telling you it's going to die. I was given the prognosis that I'm possibly going to die, and they don't even know what's trying to kill me. So lesions are like swelling in the brain, and too much swelling in certain parts, there's not communication in your brain. So then that means everything is going to shut down. So that's where they wanted to bring that inflammation down and not understanding, okay, how do we go about it to get to that?
Thank you for that clarification. And I do have to say, everybody, I have been trying to tell you that stress kills. I mean, I don't think people understand that stress kills. And, you know, I've recently in the last 2 years had some pretty intense issues with my heart and body, which got aggravated with increasing stress. And it kind of occurred over years. So it got worse over years. And so it wasn't like, oh my goodness, this happened all at once. But by the time I recognized that it was an issue, you know, a lot of damage had been done. And I just urge everybody who's listening, are you under stress? What kind of stress are you under? Please take care of yourselves, because if you don't, your body will start letting you know. And it is sometimes not pleasant or fun to get those messages.
Yeah, I want to give people the Coles notes so that they don't have to go through what I went through, really using that alchemy, taking those impurities and turning them into gold. And, you know, not just keeping the gold for myself, sharing it with others and our well-being. People hear stress, yet they don't really understand. When you are stressed, you're releasing a chemical called cortisol and adrenaline in your system. Too much cortisol, we can only, you know, process a certain amount of cortisol in our system. When there's too much, then it starts to deposit in other systems. In other systems, it slows it down and it creates inflammation. And so it would be like, you know, your car, you need gas, but then now all of a sudden you're putting diesel in it. The engine's going to shut down at a certain point because it's not meant to process diesel. It's meant to process gasoline. So stresses are psychological. You know, this thing, once we start programming it, it wants to make meaning for everything to understand and also create safety. And so the nervous system has four Fs. A lot of people heard fight or flight, but there's freeze and fawn. And I was in a lot of my fawn. My fawn was I needed to belong, so I conformed myself and I people pleased. And the expression in other people gave me an assurance that, oh, I'm worthy and I'm safe. I didn't know how to be that on my own and access that in my own body. And so when people are saying, okay, I'm stressed, but I don't even, you know, I have no choice because of responsibilities. And yeah, responsibilities, finances, finding different things, they're going to activate stress. Yet to what level are you stressing yourself out because you have these expectations placed on you from other people's stories and narrations? And that is the discovery of having to see what are you putting on yourself that doesn't belong on you, because it's other people's expectations, priorities. You're trying to please these people. You're trying to create this image, all these different things that you don't realize is ramping up your biology, because your biology is always in a method of protection. So people are like, okay, I hear stress, yet it's a lot of psychological. And spoiler alert, people, the social media ramps up our nervous system. That's how they know to get you addicted to it. Because the nervous system is based out of negative biases. It's going to always look for problems. So when you're dysregulated and you hear people about negative Nancy or they're so negative, it's because their nervous system's dysregulated and all they see is the negativity and problems. They're not able to be regulated and be in the open and the possibilities, be connected to joy. So it's better understanding, you know, what is this new world that we're navigating in and how is it impacting our biology? And what are the tools that we can use to better, you know, thrive in our lives? Does it take away the responsibilities? No, my personal life, when people see it, they're like, how can you have joy? Like, I wouldn't even be able to function in the kind of life that you have. Yet I've, you know, done certain things in my lifestyle to be able to protect my life force so I can engage with the life that has been presented for me to have the experiences. So I think, you know, when people are saying the stress and all these things, they're not really understanding the biology. And I think that's what's really important, really understanding what a nervous system is, because everybody has one. It's not an academic thing that nobody can understand. And I'm presently writing a book right now, so it's in simple terms so people can really relate with this. So then they can start having access to tools to better understand what's going on. Because to tell people not to stress, they're like, easier said than done. It's really understanding internally. And when, you know, I empathize with you, because the heart is the one big organ that we really need. And when that thing is constricted, there's a lot of pain. It hurts. A lot of fear comes up. So to be able to breathe in that too, it takes warrior work to reprogram your biology. Yet, you know, in your lived experience, there's things that you learned in that life couldn't have taught you before. There's a profoundness of wisdom that you have in that, if you're willing to engage, to learn from it. And a lot of times we just don't want to feel pain. We don't want to feel the inconvenience. And we do a lot of conflict and fighting, and we bring down our energy. But when you can work with it and understand that life is for you, your biology is trying to protect you. And if it's protecting you in a way that's harm, find out what is activating, what are the undercurrents that's creating this protection that you can remove so that it's not trying to do this method of protection anymore.
Would you agree with the statement that life happens for you, not to you?
Well, very much so. Yet maybe about 15 years ago, I wouldn't have said that.
And so it has been the journey kind of with your health crisis and emerging on the other side that's gotten you to this place, really.
Yeah. It's, you know, when people start doing their healing, it's a lot of people think it's becoming a new person. And that's not what healing is. Healing's removing the layers of pain to get to the greatness that's already inside you. And it's also being able to shift your perception. You are only looking at it one way, and to shift that perception, that takes a lot of discipline, a lot of consistency, because like I said, if the nervous system's dysregulated, it's much, much more easier to be negative than to be able to shift your perspective, your perception, I should say, and see that there's possibilities, there's an openness, and to get tethered back into joy. When we have experienced pain, we pinch ourselves off of joy. We become pessimistic and we reserve ourselves to protect ourselves and thinking that that will help us. Yet you're not even feeling alive. You're not feeling the depthness of your life right now. You're just coasting superficially. And then that becomes that you become resentful, you become depleted, and it ignites even more fear. So it's really being able to face the pain, give a different narration of what fear is also. And this narration that you're not supposed to be fearful, it's like you need to have healthy fear. So a healthy nervous system has fear. It dysregulates and it regulates back. This isn't about fully regulated nervous system, because then you're doing some bypassing and some disassociation. It's being able to recognize when you've been dysregulated to come back into regulation. And that requires you to acknowledge that the fear has been activated. And in our society, we tell people not to be fear, and it's only love or fear. And it's like, well, no, they're blended both. You have spiritual and a human experience. It's merging the two together.
I would say that shifting your perspective or your perception is alchemical work.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it is. It's, and even when I see my perception go back to default to patterns, and then me reminding it to go back there, I have the tool so I can access it much quicker. Yet it took me many years to be able to do that. So when people see, you know, what I experience in the states that I have to go in, and they're like, how do you do that? And I'm like, it took a lot of practice. Like a lot of modalities and me understanding myself. This didn't just come overnight. Yes, I've always had an open growth mindset since I was young. And I'm thankful for that. So it's, you know, some of that is easily accessible for me. Yet when it wants to go into negative bias, it takes that work to really understand I'm in a state of fear and to regulate it so that it can be open and connected to my executive function. So that's the frontal lobe of your brain, because when you're in fear and your dysregulated nervous system, it's cut off from your executive functions in the front of your brain. So it's really understanding, okay, when you're regulated, everything is communicating. And being able to be in that flow state and see what's possible and see the solutions, not just always problems.
Thank you for that. You are such a great speaker. Has anyone ever told you that? I hope they have.
Many times, yes.
You're like, why, yes. Yes, I have. Yay.
I think it's just because I learned that if you're not relatable, people aren't going to listen. Because in each story, we're listening for glimmers of ourselves to better understand ourselves. And when you're sitting kind of on a pedestal, then people don't feel like they can attain something. So they have adoration. And I'm like, don't put me on a pedestal. I want it to be relatable so that you can see the benefits, that you can actually, you know, integrate these tools in your life, because that's where the change is. Change isn't, oh, telling everybody that you got to do this. Change is always within us. So if somebody can listen to my story and see that there's a possibility of shifting things within themselves, and that they do the work within them, that's the change that's going to grow in the world. So I just make it as simple as possible so that, you know, a sixth grader can understand and access it. It's not these big academic words or these judgmental texts or this all or nothing kind of mentality. It's like, let's meet people where they are, yet also show them that they can go beyond that.
Enjoyed this interview and this conversation with Nat, otherwise known as Natalie Bedard. There will be a link in the episode show notes to her website so you can check her out and maybe book your own discovery call with her. I really appreciate her attitude. I so admire her confident way of moving in the world and her confidence in not only her own self, but her own self's capacity to heal. It was a good reminder and one that I needed this week. And I know there are a lot of us out there that probably need the same message. So take it to heart. Take it to heart this week. I want to thank everyone who listens to this podcast. Do remember that sharing is caring. And so if someone around you is having a hard time, having a hard day, say, hey, I've got this podcast that lifts my heart, lifts my spirits, sometimes makes me laugh, but always reminds me that this universe is magical. And here it is. I mean, please share the heck out of this podcast. We'd love to bring the good news of the beauty of the universe to more and more people. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Natalie. Have confidence in yourself that you will be able to heal. Have confidence in yourself that you can handle anything. That whatever slings and arrows of outrageous fortune the universe, this creation, throws at you, you've got it. You can handle it. You've got the chops. Because Natalie certainly looked around and understood what didn't work, and then changed everything. And what didn't work, and changing that, that actually saved her life. So be like Natalie. Have confidence in yourself. Have confidence in this universe. And slowly build a relationship of trust with that which we cannot see. You know what I'm talking about. That energy, that spirit, that divine echo that makes this universe move. It wants to talk to all of us, and it's just waiting for you to begin the conversation. See you next week for the very next episode. And until then, I hope your week is filled with laughter, with joy, and conversations with strangers who ultimately become your friends. I'm going to guess that meditation has played a little bit of a role in this. Is that true?
It is. It has. And if you would be so gracious, I would love to guide us in a little meditation so that you can see the benefit. I can reap the benefit right now. And listeners, some of them may not have even done meditation or don't even understand it or have a wrong definition about meditation. So I would love to be able to do that. I don't know why my camera did this. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Sorry. That's okay. There we are. We're back. Magic of technology.
Exactly. So if you would allow me to guide us in a meditation, I'd be honored. Yeah. I'm going to ask us to close our eyes. Yet listeners, most of you are listening to this while driving. So safety first, people. Don't close your eyes, please. Yet the other prompts, you're able to follow along and reap the benefits of it. I'll ask you to get comfortable in your seating. And when you're ready, you're going to gently close your eyes. And you're going to begin breathing in and out through your nose. You're not going to try and control your breath. You're just going to have your awareness, watch the rhythm of your breath, and let it guide you inside your body. There may be some sensations or feelings coming up, and that's okay. Let them come up. You're safe to feel. You're safe to let go. Surrender the need to control. Release the need to resist and just be. Be with your breath. Drop deeper into your body. By now, there may be some thoughts or a voice that's in your mind, and that's okay. Gently bring your awareness back to your breath, creating a space between the awareness and the thoughts. And go deeper into your body. Again, those thoughts may have popped up, and it's okay. Bringing your awareness back to your breath, beginning again, and creating more space between the thoughts and your awareness. And dropping deeper into your body. Now, while still staying with your breath, at your own time and at your own pace, you're going to slowly open your eyes while staying with your breath.
That was beautiful. Oh my goodness. Oh, thank you so much. You have the perfect meditation voice, I swear.
I've regulated my nervous system to better understand mine so that the frequency can go out to others so they can co-regulate with me and regulate their nervous system, because we're feeling bodies that think. Our nervous system is made out of frequency and energy. So when we have certain tones, it just brings us in a space of safety. And that's what your nervous system's always looking for.